Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, you ready for this one?
I am, and this is going to be a good show. She's talking about things that are really important to us and to a lot of the other businesses out there that we serve.
All right. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast CEO and Senior Funding Strategist with Social Impact Advisors, Ms. Quinitha Frazier. How are you?
I am wonderful and amazing. Thanks for having me.
Well, Q, can you talk a little bit about what you're up to? How are you serving folks?
Oh, man. I am the self-proclaimed technology evangelist for philanthropy. I've spent the last 18 years primarily in philanthropy, but now we are disrupting and shaking things up by holding more funders and more nonprofits accountable by putting pressure on all of us to use technology as a tool to help accelerate our work.
Now, can you explain that a little bit in more detail? Why are they not using technology?
Yeah, well, they can't afford it. And and most nonprofits don't have access. So I'll take a step back. Most nonprofit organizations depend on charitable dollars for their operations. Some of them are fortunate to have corporate donors and they have individuals that give them money and some get grants. And most foundations are run by a small board of people who come together and say they want to make good on a promise of a charter and put money in the community. Neither of these groups are either giving money away or asking for money different than Andrew Carnegie did in the 20s. We do it the same exact way. And the only issue with that is the needs are greater, obviously. You know, most of the social, economic, and environmental issues that foundations are looking to fund and nonprofits are looking to solve require a heap of exposure, a heap of accountability, and a whole lot of money. And so having been both a practitioner and a peer and a consultant in the nonprofit space, what I've learned is when we don't have the value, the leverage of technology, we are not on the radar because nonprofits can't report their numbers. People don't know what they're doing. They don't know how they're doing. We limit the amount of people that we can reach to help to join our mission. Because the onset of social media and the absolute exposure that crowdfunding platforms gives us, if a nonprofit doesn't have access to to social media, then they limit the numbers of people that can give them money. And then most importantly for me, data is the way that we prove our outcomes in our work. And so if you look at an organization like United Way or even the American Heart Association, how do we know if they're doing a good job? The way that we know that Boeing is doing a good job is Boeing could tell you right now in a very quantitative way what all of their returns on investment are, what their impact has been, because they have a very sophisticated data management system that collects that data. Well, most nonprofits don't have that luxury. And so being a proponent and a soapbox stander on making sure that nonprofits aren't operated bootlegged and without accountability, I have made it my personal mission to help connect nonprofit organizations and foundations to technology that would help to accelerate all of our work.
Now, how do you kind of connect the outcome with a number? Like the Red Cross, for example, is the thing they're trying to keep track of, how they serve people, like how many people, how many lives were impacted?
That's a great...
Or is it, you know, how many shares they got on Facebook?
That's a great question. Both of those are metrics worth talking about. But I think at the end of the day, the American Heart Association is looking to see how many lives they've saved. So that's the outcome, right? But I think what you're describing, we call them objectives or more... I call them weeds, you know, the goals and the things we're tracking in the weeds are, you know, what are we tracking in our process? Like you said, how many people did we collect blood from? How many hospitals did we supply blood to? Mm-hmm. How many individuals actually came and used the blood, and how many individuals gave blood? So for the American Red Cross, they're measuring a multitude of things. So if you take the other seat, Lee, and look at the funder, let's say that the Kellogg Foundation gives the American Heart Association $500,000 a year. So Kellogg at some point of the year says, okay, I gave you $500,000. What happened? Right. And so the American Heart Association comes back and says, let me see. I know we collected 80 gallons of blood. And they're like, okay, so what does that mean? Is it sitting in a warehouse? It's like, no, we helped this many people. And then the outcome of us getting blood to this many people meant we saved this many lives. Now, American Heart Association is a great example because they're huge and they have lots of resources. They're one of the national organizations that have both invited and absorbed technology to help them.
Right.
But when we think of smaller organizations, Jim Reese is an excellent example with the Atlanta Mission. The Atlanta Mission, I mean, they serve over 1,000 people a night, homeless persons.
Wow. Right.
Yeah. And so Jim was connected with a dear friend and colleague of mine, another nonprofit here called TechBridge. TechBridge is an IT solution provider for nonprofits with a mission of eliminating poverty. So Jim got hooked up with TechBridge. Jim Franklin's another good friend of mine, the CEO there. And TechBridge brought their team into Atlanta Missions and helped Jim to optimize and make more efficient his operations so that something as simple as when a homeless person comes in and they have to be intaked into the mission, it doesn't take 2 hours.
Right.
So they come in, they put the name in, you don't have to pull a file, open it up, flip. Right. So simple things like that, most people don't think about when they give $100 to a nonprofit. They're thinking, oh, I'm helping them. But what we're challenging funders and donors to think about is, how can that $100 be multiplied and help that organization to do more with less? And technology, I think, is that lever.
And then, so do you typically serve the smaller size nonprofit or these kind of mega nonprofits?
I work with all of them. My company and I have had a few companies, but all of my companies have had one mission, and that is to help individuals and communities to fund their vision. And one of my companies that I'm co-founder with, a technology company, we have an automated pledge collection software. So when you go to that chicken dinner or that gala and they say, yeah, we love you so much, please give us $100 if you believe in what we're doing, and there's a pledge card on the table, we replace that, because guess what? That pledge card on the table takes 3 people and about 3 weeks to process. That's why you look up and it's like Christmas, you're like, dang, I told somebody I was giving them $500. Oh my God. And I got to send a check because they don't take debit cards.
Right.
So our software allows you, when you're at the chicken dinner, to text in your pledge. And then over the next 14 days, we'll send you automated text message, email, and voicemail thank yous and reminders. So that collection happens in 14 days. And 40% of the people in that room that night will give that night. We'll go ahead and fulfill it. So that to answer your question, tons of small nonprofits take advantage of that. I mean, because it's like $300. I mean, it saves them a ton of time.
Right.
They don't have to hire somebody to process.
And it's more effective.
They have money in their pocket that night. Yeah. So yeah, we work with small startup. I've personally done the paperwork to start over 75 nonprofits. I work with super small nonprofits. And then obviously we have huge, we work with universities. We've worked with Tennessee State and Morehouse and Clark Atlanta. So we work with large schools and companies as well. But
and then your services are beyond this one text for funding, right?
Yes.
You do all kinds, you help with grants and
absolutely. And yeah. The whole gamut, when you think of a nonprofit as a house, so the infrastructure of that nonprofit is financial stability. Like any company, right? Except what I heard you say earlier, except a nonprofit, the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit's infrastructure is what you do with the profits. They both have to be profitable. So my company spends its time helping to get that infrastructure sound. Usually that means we have to start with the organization itself.
Right. Because a lot of these organizations are built on the backs of volunteers, right? Who have day jobs or working somewhere else.
You got it, Lee.
So the time allotted for this stuff is just kind of a sliver of their day.
Absolutely.
And so it's hard as an organization to kind of herd all those cats together so that they can produce the output. It sounds like you help them with structure and infrastructure.
Yes.
So that those slivers of time add up to more productive use of that time.
You hit it dead on the head. I mean, God bless them. I mean, people want to help, right?
Right.
I mean, like, we all volunteer
exactly.
everywhere. It's not like we don't want to help, but you know, I work all day. And then when right. I get home, I got to cook dinner and I want to come help plant those flowers trees, Atlanta. But here's the thing, you know, I can only do it on Saturday at like 9 to 10.
Exactly.
So my job is to help organizations like that to find the funding and the people, you know, resources to hire someone whose job it is to direct those programs. Mm-hmm. So you need to, and I tell nonprofits all the time, and there's a great example of a smart gal who's a dear friend of mine, Susanna Spasicia from Reimagine Atlanta. She is a rock star. And when Susanna first started out with an idea to help bring kids together in a diverse setting, kids from Johns Creek down to South Atlanta together around technology, media, and arts, she said, I want to go in a studio, let these kids make commercials and videos and as a way to expose them to culture and then to bring them together. She had no money. She barely had a board. But what she did is she went just like we would do if we were starting a new company. And she just met with people and just kept telling them about what they're going to do. Now, I helped her to set up the organization, the 501c3 itself, right? She found the board. We organized the bylaws, made sure we had policies, blah, 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 you know, all the things that you need to run a company. But the difference, and this is what our company, we work to do to make the difference, is she needed money.
Right. Wow.
Because she's
who
like,
thought?
Who
would have thought?
Because she's like, my dad's really nice, but it's gonna be a time limit on how long I can stay at the house, you know? But she went and she met with people who, like us, loved her mission, wanted to help kids, but we had to give her the tools to make the ask. Letters, collateral, like what do you say when you get there? What are you asking for? It was apply for grants. She got her first grant in the first year from United Way, which never happens. Because she had a sound application. She submitted it. She had a track record of doing something. So we help our organizations to put together a program plan so you know what the heck you're doing, right?
Right.
So you can do something. Then you go talk to Lee and his wife or his mom and say, I really would like to count on you, Lee, for a gift of $500 a month. You're like, maybe I can do it. What are you doing? And it's not like humming it. Well, I'm trying. That's what most people do. I'm trying. We make sure she was able to say, look, here's the plan. This is what we're doing. Here are the outcomes.
Right. If you give X, you're going to get Y in return.
Absolutely.
And that's what people want. They want that comfort of knowing that their money isn't just, so you can have a nice car, right?
Mm-hmm. Don't you get me started because you're going right to the church with that conversation.
So I want to know what some of those early conversations are like when you go into an organization, maybe they're, especially the ones that are kind of established,
mm-hmm.
and they have a culture, they have an atmosphere, they have the volunteer dynamic pretty well set and embedded. And then here comes this Q strolling in here with all these newfangled ideas. I mean, are some of those initial conversations a little bit challenging?
It is, you know, because I come and ask you, where are you going and where do you want to grow? Just, I mean, you all do, you do the same thing in business. So do you want to do more? If you do, let's talk about your revenue model. How are you making money? Lots of nonprofits that we don't think about, like libraries and hospitals and the NFL. I mean, these nonprofits, they have earned income. So
NFL seems to be doing okay.
Honey, it's good work if you can get it. I'm trying to figure out how I can get in. You know, so the hard conversation really comes to, you know, where do you want to go? Tell me your vision. Do you have a strategic plan? Most of them have a strategic plan for their organization. And where do you want to go? And typically it's, okay, Q, we want to expand. We want to help more people. We want to serve more whomever we're serving.
Right.
And then it becomes a question, how do we get there? Sometimes it's not more money. Sometimes it's just more infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes, do we have a CRM that can support all the people that we have in there? Do we have...
So you help at that level.
Absolutely. We
so
do.
So that's pretty granular.
Funding, strategy, technology, solutions, and leadership development.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Now, when people talk about grants, they make it seem like there's just all this money out there that all you have to do is just ask. There's a lot of, you know, and I'm sure you have to battle this. There's a lot of not so honest people promising things that in this world. Is that something that you got to kind of, you have to address, right? Because think that there's free money everywhere and it's simple to get, right?
I don't know if y'all remember about 15 years ago, there was a guy that used to come on TV at like 1 o'clock in the morning with the big question mark.
Question marks on his suit. I absolutely remember that.
He was like, get grant money to help fix your car, put a new roof on your house.
Exactly.
It was because of that foolishness that it's taken me. I'm not lying. Like, I did a whole tour called The Truth About Grant right after that launch. I used to remember his name. I think I got him blocked it out. Because at the time I was working for a housing authority and people would call all the time like,
I'm here for my free money.
I'm here for my free roof. What are we doing? And I'm like, man, this is like the root doctor talking to a physician. Like, so I hear you got that mix that'll make this wart go away.
Right.
If you just turn around five times. Yeah. So there is not a magic potion for grants, and it's not free money. You said it as clearly as anyone could say it. There is a return on investment for grants. And when you go to a bank and get a loan for $5,000, the return on investment for them is interest. You're paying them interest back in return for the money. When you go to a venture capitalist, they're giving you equity in exchange for a XXXXX return on investment, right? Well, in the social innovation or impact investing, what we call it, world with grants and social impact equity, they're looking for ROI that has social return. Right.
How do they define social return?
We haven't figured that out in this country yet, to be honest. So in the UK, and there are some organizations like STARS and GIRS, G-I-I-R-S, where they've created a standardized set of metrics that define success in housing, success in education. So whether a child goes from this reading level means you've done a good job. So that's evolving, and we're seeing lots of strides in Stanford, the Stanford Innovation Review. They have been our voice to make sure that we create a more standardized way of measuring that. Because to be honest, it's basically on between you and the funder. So the funder says, I gave you $500,000. I expected you to help 50 kids. You're like, I only did 50. And you tell them why, and you kind of figure that out. But my job is to help an organization quantify those outcomes. So you help five families. Did mom go back to work? I'll give you a perfect example and I'll be quiet. So United Way used to have a goal of helping homeless people, okay? So we used to measure how many people they saw, how many people came off the street, how many meals, how many beds. Honest to God, like that was the standard from HUD. HUD, Housing and Urban Development, for homeless providers. Well, about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we learned that that really wasn't a good way to measure rather you're ending homelessness, because a person can sleep in a bed for 90 days, get up, walk outside, and be right back 2 weeks later. And so donors started saying, now, wait a minute, city of Quinitas Town. We keep investing $2 million to end homelessness. Looks like there's still lots of homeless people
right
out here. So they're like, you know, maybe we're missing something. Maybe we should measure things like whether the person gets a job when they leave, whether they dealt with substance abuse, mental health. And we should measure a person's ability to not be homeless after they leave the shelter, right? So we began measuring the things that really mattered. So we had, that was a shift in how we approached funding and how we approached measurement. So it's the same thing. Like, we've got to do that everywhere now. It's like, okay, so Girl Scouts, so we're measuring cookies. Is that a good? Are the kids learning entrepreneurship? How do we know they're learning entrepreneurship? Are they entrepreneurs when they leave the little cookie stand? So, you know, things like that, it pushes the envelope on what we're really doing.
But I mean, what is that? There's an old consulting thing about what gets measured gets some, what is it?
Gets done. Right. And guess what? In my world, what gets measured gets funded.
Right. But you see, I think that sometimes there's a mistake, and just because you can measure something doesn't mean it's worth measuring. Like, take the Girl Scouts and the cookies, for example. I think that that's a wonderful concept of having young women sell cookies, because it teaches them how to sell, right? And it's selling something that's pretty easy, because they want to, everybody wants cookies. The problem comes when you have overzealous parents are better at selling than the kid, and they're the ones bringing the sheet to work, and they're selling all the cookies, and the kid's getting the prize. So the kid doesn't learn the lesson about sales.
Exactly right. Exactly. And you know what? And that conversation is one that has to be had. How do we know that the child is actually learning
the lesson of the activity?
Somebody's got to ask Lee. And you know, the only person that can ask that question is the person that's giving the money.
Right.
Because they'll answer them.
But if the measurement is how many cookies do we sell as compared to last year, mm-hmm. you're going to get it. Then the incentive is, then the parents are all trying to sell cookies.
Right.
And by hook or by crook, and it's easier for her to go and bring the list to work and kind of guilt the 20 people at her office to buy the cookies.
Us.
And then the girl's at home, you know, on her phone, texting her friends going, yeah, I sold 1,000 boxes.
And I'm getting a new badge.
Exactly.
That's
and I'm the winner.
That's
and
right.
I didn't sell any.
I'm getting a new badge. No, and I think you bring a good point, Lee. And I'm not picking on Girl Scouts. I love the Girl Scouts.
No,
I
think
the Boy
conceptually
Scouts,
that is perfect. They should be doing, that's exactly what they should be doing if the girl is doing it. Because I know in my family, if we see a girl or anybody selling anything, I don't care if it's a lemonade stand, we buy from the kid.
Yes.
If a parent's doing it, I walk right by because I don't care.
I know. Exactly.
I'm not here to support an adult doing a child's thing.
That's right.
That's not what this is about.
I agree totally. And if you take that same litmus test to, let's say, a literacy organization, mm-hmm. right? How do I know because you were able to buy 1,000 books and you saw 100 people that these people actually now can read. But guess what? Reading is really isn't the outcome. What do we really want them to do? We want them to be able to get a job.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. We want them to be able to live a functional life, take care of their family.
Right.
So going from measuring books to measuring jobs.
Right. The outcome.
Yeah, you got me. You got me. And that's the crux of what myself and of my peers we're on to.
And mm-hmm. that you're really focusing on the outcome and what really are we trying to accomplish here?
That's right.
Because sometimes you get off on a tangent and all of a sudden you're doing this activity that really isn't impacting the outcome that you want to have it.
So
at
when we talk about churches, and obviously I'm going to try to
sell my
soapbox.
Bringing it back to churches.
I know, because when I think of an organization that you go, so we've been doing this for 100 years.
Thousands of years.
Thousands.
Right.
And so what are we doing again? Like, what are we raising money for? I mean, my dad's a pastor, so I can say this, you know, in honest and not in chest. I don't know what happens most of the times to the funding that a lot of churches raise. I have no idea. I mean, I know we have building funds. We have programs, we have some internal things, but when I think about the mass of financial resource that religious organizations have, many underserved communities should not be under-resourced,
right.
Bottom line. And well, one day...
But that requires the community to hold them accountable.
Hello and amen. Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah,
I'll get in trouble about that soon.
But again, I would love to be a fly on the wall when you're having these ROI-laced conversations, especially early in the relationship.
I'm not always invited back. Let's be clear. Or I go and I say,
hey, you can only serve the people that want to be served,
To be served.
And if they think that they're pulling one over on their community and they don't want to be outed about it, then look, that's not a good fit for you.
I don't want to work with them
exactly.
at all anyway. But there are tons of people who really want to make a difference. They really do.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're starting on a shoestring budget and they just simply don't have anyone to help them.
Right.
I like to help organizations.
That's
like
a good fit.
Yeah. And then we have huge, like Atlanta Mission. I'm so proud of them. I'm proud of City of Refuge. There are lots of Atlanta-based nonprofits that are doing a great job with little. And organizations like TechBridge, when you bring in a TechBridge, TechBridge is going to open up the box and say, look, I know you're doing all of these things to help eliminate poverty. How can we do it better? How can we do it more efficiently, effectively through technology?
So now, how do you, a TechBridge, do you work with them? Is that one of your partners?
Absolutely,
you find the right fit for them, you kind of connect them?
Absolutely, yes. I work very closely with TechBridge, and they do with us. I mean, we go both ways because they have the resource of a large team of developers and business consultants. They have Salesforce and Accenture and lots of big name IT partners mm-hmm. that come to the table and say, I want to help.
All right, I got to go backwards here. I want to hear the backstory. I mean, you obviously have a tremendous amount of passion, and you have developed the ability to communicate with these people in such a way that you're able to affect some genuine results. Where did it all start? How did you get started on this path?
Well, I was born the daughter of a sharecropper. No, I was kidding. I was not a daughter of a sharecropper.
A pastor.
Daughter of a pastor. Though he wasn't a pastor at the time. You know, it was the 70s. He didn't... come on in until a little later. But my passion, I mean, I am from a very small rural town in Charleston. And rural meaning the Sea Islands, under-resourced, but great culture and great history. But what I learned there was extreme amount of pride, but I also learned what it looks like when a community is disconnected from resources. And so when I went to school, my aunt was a legislator in California. So that was my shining star that, okay, I can make a difference by getting into politics. So I always thought, if I can just get into politics, people will listen to me and I can bring
more
money.
Right?
It's that simple. Oh my God, don't get started. So I went to school, studied political science because I thought I needed a political
science
degree.
Of course.
That's what it says in the name, right? And I interned at the White House. And it was in DC that I was able to see the connection between funding, organizations, and policy. And that they all three were interconnected. I worked in the Office of Public Liaison, so it was our job to talk to all the millions of organizations in the country and give them a voice.
That's where all the free money comes from.
Right.
You found the free money office.
Yeah, that was the free money office. And the guy was there. I guess half was up in there.
And you're like, how much you need today? And just handing it out, right?
Right. Right, yeah. I found the mother load. Yeah. And I left there and I was going to go back and work for HUD. That was my dream because I wanted to help with housing. But, as life and divinity had it, I ended up at Talladega College in Institutional Advancement, which is their fundraising office. And that was the first time that I learned to do grant writing, learned to ask for money, and learned to...
And you saw that maybe it wasn't as easy as
It was not easy at all. Nobody was shuffling out $100 bills. Nobody was making it rain. In fact, they called me the rainmaker, like, Q, what's up? We need some money for this building. So, and learning that, and let me tell you what else I learned, though, because that was a big university. But all of the people who knew I was a grant writer that would come knocking at my door saying, Q, we need a grant for this, we need a grant for that. I said, whoa. First of all, you can't get a grant if you're not a nonprofit. Well, most people will not get a grant if you're not a nonprofit. There are some exceptions. So maybe I need to do some educating about this grant process. So that's when I started my company in 2004, just to help this whole like grant thing. Like, okay, let me do some workshops, to work with some folks. Folks want to start nonprofits. Let's figure out how else you can make your first $2,000 because it's probably not going to be a grant. And that's really where I've learned. It's been in the freaking dugout, like down
You're
here
in the trenches.
With the trenches. And over the years, I've been very fortunate and blessed to grow my career in the foundation space. I work with the Southeastern Council of Foundations. That's a membership organization of over 100.
So a foundation
100.
Of foundations?
Exactly. Yeah, actually, you have a great use of words. I'm a word person. I watch Wheel of Fortune every night if I'm at home. Just saying. So a foundation of foundations and other great organizations I've been fortunate to work with. And what it's helped me to understand is you take all the paint off of any nonprofit in this country, whether it's the Smithsonian Museum or the little food pantry downtown, they have the same exact issues. Right. Just at different scales, different degrees, same issues. So for me, I'm always thinking of new ways to grow their work because the work in the world grows every day. I mean, we have wildfires, we got hurricanes. If you think about it, it's always something going on that needs resource.
And the resources are a lot of times those communities affected by whatever that situation
Absolutely.
Happens to be. So the more educated they are and for them to be able to get more and more resources, the more successful they'll be.
Exactly.
And they can impact more lives.
That's right. And at the end of the day, and let me say this before we go. I am not like Miss Superwoman like most of my peers who work for for-profit companies and funding and capital, they really laugh at me because they're like, what, you little do-gooder? Like, what are you doing? Like, nobody, you don't make money doing this. Nobody is like, I mean, we care about it, but we're not going to make it a business or make it a career. And I get it, right? Because when you hear someone like me coming talking about social innovation and, nonprofit resilience and community work and making the world better, it sounds so altruistic and it sounds so pie in the sky that most people in capital and equity just feel like, yeah, girl, all right, go get a job, like my dad used to say. But I got to tell you, there are lots of people who feel the way I do. And it's evidenced by the $358 billion with a B dollars that was donated in this country last year.
That's right.
Billion. And we know that the nonprofit market is worth over, the numbers are in the $3 trillion. So it's not that there isn't a need or there aren't people who care. We got to bring more structure. So that's my job. We got to bring more structure.
Right. There's more bang for the buck.
Absolutely.
The thing. I think that we lose sight a lot of times in this country about how generous we are as a country.
Yeah.
And that just because a lot of other countries, the government funds all of the activity. In our right. country, the individuals fund a lot we of this do, stuff.
Right. Yeah, right.
And we're writing a lot
that's
of checks.
True, that's a true statement.
So, and we don't kind of give ourselves enough credit for being as generous as we are
that's
as a country.
Statement. That's a true statement. We were socialists. We go, oh. And somebody call the
problem.
Governor.
Yeah, that's the government's problem to
right,
fix that.
Somebody call the governor.
But here we're empowering individuals to say, you know what? I got a problem in my neighborhood. I'm going to start something and I'm going to fix this problem in my neighborhood.
Oh, my God. And if I could get you to write a book about that, there's so many.
You need to write the book.
Oh,
you're the
man,
expert.
I'm
You've seen
you.
Probably stories all over the country about
yes.
individuals stepping up,
yep.
saying, you know what? I am going to be the change that's required in this community.
That's exactly right. And those are the people I run towards.
Exactly. Then you can help because
right.
you go, look, I got a motivated person here. I can help get them more money and make them more successful and do even more.
And that's why I put so much pressure on the church. That's why I bring it up in jest, but I'm serious. If I can mobilize churches just in the African-American community alone, let's just forget everybody else, alone, the community would take care of itself.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Amen to that.
And no... Stone, people don't want to hear me say that.
I'm sure there are people that want to hear
they,
you say
yeah,
that, though.
Because they feel that way, too. They know it's the truth. They know that we're talking about problems that we should be solving
well,
ourselves.
Well, accountability, you know, people don't, they like the idea of it, but
yeah.
not for them, you know, for other people.
No, it's good. You just don't want to get any of it on you.
Yeah, right. Go over there. Solve that problem. Get away from me. Yeah.
Well, if there is a nonprofit that's starting up or a successful one that wants to kind of just leverage your resources more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Oh, man. Email me. It's Q-U-E at the Q brand, the letter Q brand.com. I'm on LinkedIn, just my entire name, Quinitha Frazier. I actually love LinkedIn because it's an easy way to communicate. And of course, I'm on Instagram and Twitter, all that good stuff. But yeah, Q at the Q brand is the easiest way to
and
get
the
me.
And theqbrand.com. If you're a nonprofit and you want to do more with less or
yep.
do more with more.
Come with more. We want more. No, I'm kidding.
Right?
Yeah, come for more and less, but we want more than
the
less.
Theqbrand.com
yeah.
is yep. the place to go.
And thank you all for taking time to do this. This is a business radio accelerator. And I love your work because you are concerned about growing entrepreneurs and small businesses. And oftentimes philanthropy is left out of that conversation, but thank y'all.
Not in our world.
Thank you so much.
Not
I appreciate
in our world.
It.
Well, it's absolutely our pleasure. And it has been a delight having you in the studio this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed this.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our fearless producer, Katie Galley, and our guest today, Quinitha Frazier. And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.